Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. Chief Handicapper Greg Carpenter is going to join us a little later in the show, as is Tony Dottermaid. Tony Dottermaid, Jimmy, a name I haven't heard in some time. New Australian cricket selector taking over from Trevor Holmes. Cannot wait to speak to him. Lots to talk about in the world of cricket. And lots to talk about again with what's happening with the Australian Open. It dominated a lot of the show last night. Everyone wanted to have their say on whether Novak Djokovic should be able to play in the Australian Open. Fair to say the Federal Immigration Minister, Alex Hawke, when asked about it today, didn't miss.
You'll need to be double vaccinated to visit Australia. That's a universal application, not just to tennis players. I mean, that's every visitor to Australia will need to be double vaccinated. Our health advice is that when we open the borders, everyone that comes to Australia will need to be double vaccinated. I have a message to everybody that wishes to visit Australia. You'll need to be double vaccinated.
Could not be stronger.
Yep.
And so he's got two choices, get vaxxed or don't come.
Yep, and even Greg Hunt, who's the federal health minister.
Yep,
yep. He's got reiterated those thoughts exactly. He's as clear as day.
Yep, they can't go back from that. So we now know if whoever gets off a plane into Australia, will be double vaxxed, returning residents or not.
Can you imagine the backlash if he didn't?
No, it couldn't.
It'd be enormous.
Anyway, hey, I've got some footy news.
Oh, I want to hear this.
Melbourne fans, Western Bulldogs fans, just turn up your radio a little bit. Now, I have some information that I think is true. Carlton and Richmond is going to open up the season again.
Thursday night,
round one. Put it in your diary.
Okay, I'm getting out the pencil.
I am told that Friday night, a day later, is looking increasingly likely will be the grand final replay.
Round one.
Of Melbourne against the Western Bulldogs. Now, it's been a while since we've had grand final replays in round one. They usually save them for a little bit later in the year. But I am told that Melbourne, early days after the grand final, went to the AFL and said, hey, everyone's fans, including our fans, have been absolutely smashed by the pandemic. Melbourne fans and the Western Bulldogs fans couldn't be there, largely, to see what happened, unless you... No, I won't go there. So let's give it to them earlier. And let's unfurl the flag on the Friday for the people and the fans that have been waiting 57 years to do it. I'll tell you this, Jimmy. What a 1-2 punch it would be if we had close to capacity crowds. Carlton Richmond Thursday night usually gets 80,000 without even blinking. They'll sell it out Friday night, the Demons and the Western Bulldogs. That would be awesome. Now, the question I have, 13-13-32, Melbourne fans, are you happy with it there? Would you like it to be pushed back a little bit so you got something to look forward to later in the season? I don't know why you would. Or neutral fans, is this an actual opportunity for the AFL to say, no, Melbourne against the Western Bulldogs is a much more important fixture than Richmond versus Carlton? Should that be the Thursday night? 13-13-32. Jimmy.
You made a good point there. We love traditional sort of games. So, you know, from my point of view, Geelong, Hawthorn, Easter Monday.
Yep.
So every Easter Monday, you know Geelong, Hawthorn are playing.
Yep. Great marquee fixture.
Anzac Day, always.
Collingwood Essendon. Queen's Birthday?
Yeah, another one.
So Anzac Day Eve.
All that.
So Melbourne. Dreamtime at the G.
Yep. So all that sort of stuff. So do you go against the grain of that? Because if you change at 1 year, the Thursday night opener being now traditionally, I know it hasn't always been Carlton Richmond, but it has been
for a while.
Yeah. But then that opens up the door every year for every other club to go, well, why not? Why not us?
Yeah. I'm kind of neutral on this. I think that Carlton Richmond is a nice way to start the season. They always get a big crowd. But I can see the neutral fan going, well, hang on. Richmond belt Carlton every year. They haven't won every opening round since 2013. We'd like to see another game.
Yeah, but the point I'm making is this is just a not this year thing.
So it's true.
If you change it to, oh, well, let's just make Melbourne Bulldogs, well, then every year then it changes, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm personally happy with. I think that Thursday night, Friday night is bang, bang. Love it. But what do the Melbourne fans think? What do the Dogs fans think?
Would they love to get out their fresh charcuterie boards they all got for Christmas?
Don't be cheeky. The Melbourne fans will come for you if you do that.
No, they've made them as merchandise.
Have they?
Yes.
Okay.
See?
Missed that.
Wasn't just me. I'm helping them selling merch.
Rosetta's in Deer Park. Hello, Rosetta.
Hi, boys. How are you going?
We're good.
That's good. I'm a Western Bulldogs supporter, and if the AFL do that, that is sensational. That'll make up for not being there.
Yep.
I think it'll be great for footy, and it'll be great for the fans to get there so early in the season. Round one would be fantastic. It'll be a full house, I guarantee it.
Rosetta, would you want it on the Thursday night or the Friday night?
Oh, look, I'm happy with the Friday night. It's no big. I think I'm happier with the Friday night, actually. I love Friday night.
Rosetta, I'm not trying to open up old wounds here, but can you just tell me what was going through your head when Bontempelli snapped the ball over his shoulder to put you 19 points up midway through the third quarter?
Well, I can't even. I grabbed my husband. We danced around the lounge room, but that didn't last very long.
No, it was a short dance.
Here we go. It's all over. We are going to win this. And that was really short-lived.
Matt, our paddle operator's Bulldogs, got the Bulldogs mask on. He just had to take a little break then.
Yeah. Can I ask you, you're the Scoopy. Do you have any information when actually Friday night time slot does it start? Is it still going to be at like quarter to midnight after the eighth running of Better Homes and Gardens, or is it going to be at 7?
You're one of these people that think that the footy's on too late, eh?
Friday night it is.
7:50.
Far too late.
Just gives a little bit of extra time for the people coming from the CBD.
No one's in the CBD, mate. Well, empty.
They might be, James. It's empty. Because we might actually open up the city again.
You could shoot three cannons down there and you wouldn't hit anybody.
Yeah, and yet the councils are still towing cars 4:33 on Clearways. Don't start me.
And I'm telling you, if you're going to see the footy and it's at 7 o'clock, you're leaving work early on a Friday.
Businesses are very important and jobs need to be done.
Most people have knocked off at lunchtime for the long lunch anyway.
that's
a Friday tradition in Melbourne, and don't tell me any different.
Don't tell anyone. Toby's in Shepparton. G'day, Toby.
G'day, mate.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, historically round one, you sort of get sellouts regardless. I'm a Tiger man, but Tigers, Carlton always get big numbers, and every other game generally does. It just loses the potential for 8-0 rematch or a 7-1 where it turns into an 8-point game when it gets cold and miserable in Melbourne when no one's down the footy. You sort of open it back up and get everyone back in there for the blockbusters. You don't want to put all your eggs in there round one and two basket, that's all.
No, that's a good point. Thanks, Toby. From Shepparton to Q. G'day, Anthony.
Scoop, g'day. I would actually start every season with the Premiers unfurling their flag. That's got to be the first game of every season. I'm declaring that now as a Melbourne supporter. But I've hated seasons in the past where you get to like round four before Geelong actually get down to Geelong. I reckon the very first game should be the Premiers unfurling their flag. Forget Carlton Richmond, that's boring. And it should be Melbourne against Port Adelaide, not Melbourne against Bulldogs. Melbourne against Bulldogs will happen. Melbourne should use because Port's a team they didn't play in the finals one, and use it as a game that's normally a low drawing crowd. Use that as a if you like, an extra blockbuster.
I don't mind that idea. That's not one I've heard before. So he's saying use another big team that went deep into September, but that Melbourne didn't play, that would otherwise usually...
Didn't play Port.
No, I like it.
It's bit of thought there. Different. I like it. And he's also updating his Windows application in the background we heard there.
Yeah, and driving as well. Yeah. There's a lot going on with Anthony.
No, but that's a clever thing. We love solutions. I love when someone comes on with a solution.
Yeah. Now, I think the AFL are saying that, well, we don't know if we can make it the Friday because we've got to look ahead on days' breaks around what day's Anzac Day going to be, you know, Queen's Birthday. But I think Anzac Day is a Monday this next year. Queen's Birthday, obviously, on the Monday. So that shouldn't really affect breaks of a Friday night. Like, if Anzac Day Eve was a Wednesday, you could see them working backwards. Anyway, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'd say it would be the favourite right now. Carlton Richmond on the Thursday night, Melbourne Bulldogs on the Friday night. Watch this space. More sports day after this. Greg Carpenter, EGM Racing at Racing Victoria, and the Chief Handicap is going to join us next.
Dr. Drill trying to go with her as Tralee Rose runs off the track. Two further back to Fibrillate, La Dondevie, and then Hustle Award. Tralee Rose with Dr. Drill giving her a race at the 100. The mare has to lift. Tralee Rose just in front of Dr. Drill. Tralee Rose a neck Dr. Drill. Tralee Rose won the Geelong Cup.
Yes, she did. Tralee Rose. Another great call from Matty Hill. Isn't Matty Hill just going from strength to strength? Every time I hear him call, I reckon he's calling a better race. It's actually quite extraordinary. So Tralee Rose wins the Geelong Cup, which for a while, I'm not sure for how long now, for a while has been pretty good, a pretty good form line. I'm trying to work, did Junaden win Geelong Cup when Junaden won the Melbourne Cup, or was it the year after? Anyway, we've got Greg Harpender on the line, the chief handicapper, who knows all about it. Welcome, Greg.
Hi, Sam and Jimmy. And you're right, Americain started, well, he didn't start it at all, actually. Media Puzzle won the Geelong Cup and then went on to win the Melbourne Cup.
Media Puzzle, early 2000s.
Correct.
Okay.
Broke the course record, I think, and then Americain won it and went on to win the Melbourne Cup, Dunedin the following year. And it's been a good pointer in recent years. Prince of Arran won it 1 year and was placed second in the Melbourne Cup that year. So it's a good point of the Melbourne Cup, and really pleased that Tralee Rose. Who would doubt Matt Hill?
No one.
About the pronunciation. Tralee Rose won it today.
Exactly, Greg. It's not only beautiful fresh air down there in God's country, but Werribee is normally the big base there for a lot of the foreign
internationals.
So it's just a short trip down the road to get some miles on the legs for them.
Well, I had a talking about Geelong today. It was a disappointment for the Geelong Racing Club and the new CEO Luke Rayner, who's just taken over about 6 or 8 weeks ago, that they couldn't get a crowd on course today. Beautiful weather. And it would have been a great day for the people of Geelong. And I got a message just prior to the race that there's a strong connection between Tralee Rose and St. Joey's Football Club. Some of the people around St. Joey's down there are in the ownership. But you're right, a lot of the internationals in previous years have just taken the small journey from Werribee International Horse Centre down to Geelong, running that race as a stepping stone into the Melbourne Cup. We've got a significantly less number of international horses at Werribee this year. Two came in on grand final weekend, Gold Trip and State of Rest. They'll run in the Cox Plate on Saturday. And then four others who were all in the Melbourne Cup last year's winner, Twilight Payment. Spanish Mission, who's an outstanding stayer from England. Away He Goes, who ran second in the Goodwood Cup, a Group 1 race, and another horse on the borderline called St. Lucan. So we might still have three, maybe four Melbourne Cup runners, but it's great to see horses like Incentivise and today Tralee Rose for the team at Warrnambool, Simon Wilde. Great for a young trainer like Simon to have a Melbourne Cup runner.
Now, on Incentivise, did you get a nice text message or an angry text message from Peter Moody?
Well, you don't get a text message because the 17 years I've been doing this job, I always ring the trainer before I announce it to the media. So he didn't have to text me. It'd be a bit daunting ringing Peter at the best of times. You don't know what he's very honest with his opinion, but happy to say that he thought the horse was fairly treated. He expected to get around 1.5 kilos. When you're up in the weights like that, you're always hoping for a little bit less. But he could have got a little bit more. So I think on balance, he was okay with the 57. They've won the Caulfield Cup. You know, talked a lot about the fact over the last couple of days that the last horse to win both races was Ethereal in 2001. I've announced penalties for 13 Caulfield Cup winners since that have actually run in the race, and none of them have been able to finish top three. So it's still a big challenge for him. But, gee, I don't know how good this horse. I really don't. The sky's the limit. And he could very well go around in the Melbourne Cup with 57 and still win and win comfortably.
Greg, I reckon you'd be one of the few people who'd left high school and actually uses algebra, because the way you have to work out whether it's 0.5 kilo, 1 kilo, up or down, 2 kilos, 2.5, how do you put all the mix of, as you just mentioned, history, where the race was run, fields, weights of other horses in the field, the quality of the field, even weather a factor, and the winning margin. How do you put that all into your secret calculator and get it all out to be whatever the penalties may be?
Well, it's a really good question, Jimmy, because you've got to... I always say handicapping is an imprecise science, but you are trying to use fact and precedence to try and make your decisions. For those people out there who don't necessarily understand the concept of a handicapper, the idea is that weight impacts the performance and the ability of a horse to perform over various distances. And the more weight that you have to carry over the longer distance, the more challenging it becomes. And the idea or the theory is that in a 3200 metre race like the Melbourne Cup, every half kilo of additional weight is the equal of a length. Now, again, for those people who aren't racing fans, a length is about 2 metres. So if you give, incentivise a kilo and a half over 3200 metres, your theoretical impact on his performance is 3 lengths or 6 metres more than what he would have if he didn't have to carry that additional weight. So the idea is that you're trying to moderate his performance by giving him additional weight, still try and get him a winning chance in the race, but also give his opposition an opportunity to be competitive with him. Weight is not the only factor. There's luck in running, barrier draws, track on the day. But, after doing this job for quite a while, never ceases to amaze me how much focus people put on the weight that the horses have to carry. Mm. And there is no doubt that it does impact performance. And an extra kilo and a half carrying from 50 to 51 and a half is less of an impact than if you have to go from 55 and a half to 57, because it's the straw that broke the camel's back theory. The more weight that you keep tipping on, at some point you're gonna significantly impact performance. So 57, it's a challenge for him. Only one horse in the last 44 years has carried 57 or more to win the race, Maccabi Diva. But the connections are taking up the challenge, and I hope that they can create their own piece of history by winning the double.
Yeah, Maccabi Diva, 52 when she first won in 03, then 55 and a half, then 58. Glenn Boss on top, on board in all those three runs. It's a fascinating job you have, Greg, and I was just looking through it before, and I was just going to set you a test if you can put away your cheat sheet if you've got a book in front of you. There's only been one horse since Efficient in 07 who carried 54 and a half to actually win the cup carrying more than 55 and a half. Can you tell us who
that would be? Yeah, well, that would be the great German stayer Protectionist, who was trained by Andreas Voller, 2014. And he actually, that was an odd year. When you originally put the weights out, the top weight must have 58. Mm. And the horses at the top of the weights that year were horses that would not normally have 58. So all the weights that year went up by a couple of kilos. And Andreas brought Protectionist out. He had good form in Germany. He ran fourth at Caulfield in the Herbert Power, and then ran a great race to win the Melbourne Cup. Andreas Voller's fallen in love with racing. He came out here and ran Ash Run in the Geelong Cup last year, and then had a top five finish with him, I think. Top 10 finish, rather, with him last year. But no Andreas this year. But Sam, I don't like questions without notice. No, but I think I got that one.
No,
right.
You did. You nailed it. No, I guess the point that I was just trying to make, Greg, is that, you know, in order to carry, say, 57 or more and run a good race, you're basically saying that you think incentivise might be a freak, right? I mean, Maccabi Diva 05, I'm trying to work out, Americane the year after, was it 11, ran fourth in the wet, storming down the outside, might have been carrying 58 or 58 and a half. I can't remember. But
58 and got a long way back. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
And so Americane was a freak as well. So you're essentially saying incentivises in rarefied air, or you think it might be?
Absolutely. Yep. And again, just to put some of the historical stuff into context, Golden Black was the last horse to win the race with 57. That was in 1977 for Bart Cummings. Since then, 68 horses have carried 57 or more. As we mentioned earlier, the only one to have won is Maccabi Diva, who was a freak. Now, that's one out of 68.
Yeah.
Ten have run placings, to be fair. Ten have run placings, but a lot of them have run well but been beaten by better horses with less weight. Charlie Rose, we'll work out over the next 24 hours whether she gets a penalty or not. The good news for Simon Wilde and her owners is that she doesn't need a penalty to get into the race. But if she goes around with 51, that's 6 kilos or 12 lengths. With incentivizer's got to be 12 lengths better than her to be able to beat her with that, giving away that weight. He's not going to be the only horse that's carrying 57. Last year's winner, Twilight Payment, who goes to the race in better form, in my opinion, than he did last year, has 58. Very Elegant is running in the Cox Plate. I know the owners want to run her again in the Melbourne Cup, but we'll see if they do that. Spanish Mission, who, as we said, is one of the European challengers, a Doncaster Cup winner, a Yorkshire Cup winner, ran second to Stradivarius in the Lonsdale Cup at his last start, and there were 7 lengths back to the third horse. He has 57. And Gold Trip, the horse that runs in the Cox Plate, ran 4th in the Arc last year. So, you know, world-class form, and he has also 57. So Incentivise is not the only horse that got that challenge. There are others. But as I said, on my resume, what is missing is a dual winner of the Caulfield Melbourne Cup, and we'll see if that's added to that on Tuesday with Incentivise or Tuesday week.
We can't wait. Greg, fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for your interest. And I hope everyone enjoys the racing. I hope people can get back to the track soon, not only to Flemington, but also Geelong and Warrnambool and all those country tracks around Victoria. It's a great thing to do over the spring and summer and get there with your friends and have a great day at the races.
It certainly is. Good on you, Greg. Greg Carpenter there, EGM Racing at Racing Victoria, and the chief handicapper who knows about numbers in racing more than anyone in this country of ours, I dare say. More Sports Day with Jimmy after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Tony Dottomey, new Australian cricket selector, still to join Jimmy and myself. But first, it's time for news headlines with Tony Tardio. Jimmy usually says,
good evening.
And Tony usually says,
good evening. Australia's COVID vaccine rollout has hit a key milestone. 70% of people 16 and over have had both doses. Aged care residents will be offered a booster injection from mid-November. 12 more people have died with the virus in Victoria. There were 1,841 new infections today. The Office of Information Commission has ordered the release of more than 100 pages of Health Department briefings related to the February lockdown in Victoria. The opposition says Victorians deserve to see the public health advice used to justify lockdowns. Victoria Racing Club is making 11th-hour contingencies for a crowd at Derby Day. The state government's considering if it's safe to allow racing fans to attend the event next weekend. 10,000 members, fans and sponsors will be trackside for the Melbourne Cup. And former Test cricketer Michael Slater has been charged with domestic violence offences. The 51-year-old is accused of stalking or intimidating his partner and harassing her by phone. He is walked from Manly Police Station in Sydney on conditional bail. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
He needs different advice. He needs better advice from those close to him. You know, I don't think his management's providing the right support and the right advice, because at the end of the day, it's not just about the dollars. It's about, I don't like the term, but Ben Simmons' brand, both in the States and here in Australia. He's got every opportunity to be right at the top of the tree when it comes to Australian basketball players, but at the moment, he's just not.
That was Chris Anstey speaking about Ben Simmons. If you hadn't caught up with the news, he's been suspended by the Sixers for 1 game for conduct detrimental to the team. ESPN reporting that Doc Rivers asked Simmons to join a defensive drill. Simmons refused. Rivers asked again. Simmons said no again. Rivers then told Simmons he should go home, and Simmons dropped the ball and left. I think that's called cracking it.
That's conduct unbecoming to the best interest of the team.
Did you ever have an argument with a coach at training?
No. Why would you argue with him?
Yeah, it's quite, I mean, we're tongue-in-cheek at the moment, but it's quite a serious situation, and clearly he needs to get out of the Sixers, but this is only hurting his brand at the moment.
Yeah, well, he might be the most hated athlete in Philadelphia, which is one of the most passionate sporting bases in the world.
Amazing city, Philadelphia. We just don't want, and I heard the comparisons today on different radio stations and in different media outlets, the comparisons to Kyrgios and Tomic are not unfair right now, but let's hope they don't become more real as time goes on. Let's hope Ben turns this around, does what he needs to do to get back to being the pro athlete that we all know he is. More Sports Day after this with Tony Dottomey.
Gone. Yes, he gets his 4th wicket. Well caught by Valletta at second slip. Got Bracewell coming forward, and Dottomey having a wonderful test match. 50 runs with the bat and 4 wickets in the second innings.
Oh, the great Bill Laurie talking about the retired test player Tony Dottomey there, who is now Trevor Holmes' replacement. Dottomade played 10 tests and 24 ODIs as that bowling all-rounder. Averaged 22 with the bat. Took 34 wickets in tests at 28. Pretty good going. Tony Dottomade, as we welcome you in.
Thank you very much, lads. Good to be on.
Tell us, Tony, and we'll get to James Pattinson's news shortly, but your initial thoughts about taking the role and you know, the importance that it has at Cricket Australia?
Really, real excitement. I mean, it's an opportunity that I never really considered before and that I would have. But so I'm just delighted to be involved back in elite cricket again, right at the heart of Australian cricket, and a wonderful opportunity. I was reflecting that you get perhaps a chance of a handful of times to do something special, and I really consider this is it. So I can't wait to get involved, and loving it. So great to be back after a few roles in cricket over the years, but it's really good to be back now, and can't wait to get into it with George and JL and the rest of the team at Cricket Australia.
Tony, Jimmy Bartel here. I'm going to use a bit of footy lingo for you to maybe get you to describe yourself as probably a selector. Are you Malcolm Blight, where you play almost eight forwards and you try and kick 150 points, or you're Chris Scott and you're just trying to play it safe and roll out the template with three quicks, a spinner and a standard batting lineup? What are we going to see from you?
Well, I am a Bulldogs man, Jimmy. Yeah. So can I call myself Bevo and just be done with that? I mean, I think it's there's a real balance to be struck. Of course, I'm a real I was probably a bit of a dour player myself, I suppose, as an all rounder. Just try to get in the game some way, but really loved and really attracted by the players that play with flair and real excitement. So you need that balance of everyone involved. I'm sure in footy's the same. Those elements there working for you, a bit of X factor, but also the guys that are going to deliver. So, nothing's ever the same from game to game and series to series, and with so many things up in the air. But I'm really confident that between JL, George, and myself, and of course in collaboration with not only the Cricket Australia high performance team, but all the state associations too, working together, that we can really put a special program together and represent Australia well.
I know Sam's going to ask you about James Pattinson, but I've just got one on our batting lineup, and in particular our middle order. Every year as we come around to the first test, and in particular the Ashes, it's almost a debate of whether you go to tried and true, the Usman Khawajas, Marsh as well, back into the middle order, or you try someone with potential who might not quite be ready for test level, but we've seen it work. Cam Green over there in the West, a big tall bat as well. How do you strike the balance? Because obviously cricket is one of those sports where everyone is a selector.
That's right. I gather there was about 11 million applications for the role, actually, Sam, but Jimmy, but it's look, it's never sort of easy. I'm a bit like everyone else. I'm 48 hours after being appointed to the role, and most of my opinions and thoughts are really like everyone else's at the moment, from the outside. So I'm really interested in and keen to get involved in the nitty-gritty and the planning that the lads have gone through at the moment, and also in detail of the form of who the options are. So I certainly wouldn't be making a call at the moment, but now, what I would say is that it's great that at the moment, with the games that have been played, people are putting their hand up. And as I've said a couple of times, in an Ashes year, that's what you'd really want. You'd want players you want the competition to just step up a notch, and people really keen to play in these key marquee series. So the guys that have been playing at the moment have been doing that. And I know today that New South Wales and Victorian teams are going to get a chance to play a couple of games too, which is great. So that everyone get a bit of a crack to put their name forward.
Tony, James Pattinson has retired from international cricket. Why?
Oh, look, I was really sad when I read that, coming across the wires in the last hour or so. I know James really well. He was coming up through Victoria, obviously, when I was at Cricket Victoria as CEO. So I've seen his right from the outset, really. And, as a young buck coming through, he was such an exciting prospect, but his back, was always an issue in those early days. And I think that's that in the end, he's probably those injuries have crueled him. He's had dreadful luck over the time, but you know he's a big bodied fast bowler. He's really aggressive. He loves putting. He can't go at 50% or 75%. You know, he's 100% when he's on, and when he's been playing well and fit. He's been so exciting to see in those teams because he really does intimidate the opposition as well. And he's someone who just thrives and loves. He's got a real energy about him too. So at his best, that is what was on offer. But there's also been so many frustrations he's had, including a really serious back operation a couple of years ago. Given that he kept on having those stresses in about the same spot. So that was a courageous decision to go through that because obviously your body's carrying through for the rest of your life. And I haven't spoken to James, so I hope to get the chance to. But he's finished up with, 20-odd tests and 15 one-days and, you know, some 2020s as well. So, you know, a lot of people would kill for that sort of career. But he's still got some cricket left in him. But I just think that extra dimension of, doing the work and putting his body through all of that again sounds like it's just been a bit much.
And where's Will Pukowski at?
Will, I don't have any inside information there. I'm really keen to understand what the medical reports are and reports coming out of Cricket Victoria as well. But I believe he is back in training and hopefully he gets a chance to play, if not the first game, then the next game, Shield game there. And he's another exciting talent. You mentioned Cam Green before who really is exciting. And I think Will's the same. I saw him coming through the Cricket Victoria program and a guy that loves batting and he makes big, big hundreds and double hundreds as well, which is really exciting for the future. So, again, a few injury concerns and your body and your health are all important, but we all hope that he can pull that together and really have a substantial career.
Tony, great to have you on. Good luck with the new role and we're very interested to see the teams you put out there for the Ashes.
It's time for a country racing update. The country is back racing strong again. Support local communities and visit countryracing.com.
Oh, it's all happening in country racing. Geelong Cup today. Trelee Rose getting on top and now goes in to the Melbourne Cup. And the future is bright with crowds ready to come back to the races from the first week of November. Maggie Payne joins us from Country Racing Victoria. Exciting times ahead in the near future, Maggie.
Yeah, the Geelong Cup today just got us so excited for the rest of the spring. And I'm sure Judy went to a few Geelong Cups over the period. But welcome back crowds over November.
Absolutely.
You sort of the mayor down there? Did you have your own sort of private box?
No, it's a day off down in Geelong too, usually.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
I think they still have the day off today, to be honest.
Mm. It was a national holiday down in Geelong.
No, it's not often regions have holidays. Your whole state. Hey, Maggie, we mentioned the crowds are coming back, but you can get your tickets on sale for Christmas party and summer race days now?
Yeah, I think now we're just building towards the end of spring and summer, Jimmy. We've got lots of race days available right across the state, so make sure you get along and support your local club, but also get out and explore the region wherever you can.
Well, Sam, make sure you put extra sunscreen on. I worry about you out in the sun there at the races.
I worry about me in winter in the sun.
Hey, Ballarat Cup's coming up, and we speak about the great regional races.
We love the Ballarat Cup.
Ballarat Cup. Have you got a tip for us or who we should be keeping an eye out for, Maggie?
Oh, not a bit early, Jimmy. We've got the end of November, but
Come
I have
on,
got
Jimmy.
A early
nah,
whisper. Maha Amadeus will be going to those kind of cups if you're looking for one. Nick Ryan, he's an up-and-coming trainer. He tells me he's going to the Ballarat and Pakenham Cup, so one to keep your eye on, and they'll have crowds back. So if you want to get to the Ballarat Cup, that's the end of November.
That's the early mail where you get the good odds. Okay. That's what you need.
So, Maggie, if Jimmy and I were going to sort of rent a bus one of these weekends, what would be the one country meet that we should be going to?
Oh, I don't think I can say that in my job, can I, Sam?
Yeah, you can. But, you can give us your favourite. It's like saying your favourite child is.
Exactly, and I've got 64 of them to choose from, but if you do have one across the summer, make sure you go to the Hanging Rock races.
Yes.
They haven't raced for a long time in terms of no crowds, so Hanging Rock, put it on your bucket list. They race New Year's Day and Australia Day.
New Year's Day and Australia Day. Okay.
Pencil it in.
Putting it in the diary. Get on your Maggie Payne there from Country Racing. What's happening in the world of country racing? Geez, I'm excited for the spring.
Yeah, I went to a Bendigo Cup with Joel Selwood and the Selwoods. Geez, that was an interesting experience.
Why?
The Selwoods and Bendigo?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't talk to them. Everyone just comes up to them. You end up spending the whole day by yourself, drinking your own beer by yourself.
Does Joel get grumpy or?
He's always grumpy.
Who's the least grumpy of the Selwoods?
Scott.
Scott's good fun. Now, what have you got planned for how is your life changing as we come out of restrictions?
Get a haircut.
Freedom Friday. Yeah, okay. So when's the haircut booked in?
Saturday morning.
Okay. Joe Scandizzo will be doing that for you, I assume.
He's a good friend of mine. No, he is.
Let me pick up that name for you.
You dropped it.
Are we going with the one on the sides and the mullet out the back, Bailey Smith sort of areas?
Something like that. No, something you can set your time to. Real sharp.
And then Thursday night, midnight, you're heading somewhere?
No, I have the bed.
Why not?
Because it's midnight on a Thursday night. Oh, you
come on. When did you turn 57?
You've got responsibilities, unlike yourself.
No, well, that's true.
Put some sunscreen on, please, for the next few days. I'm worried about you.
Friday? Anything?
Why is Friday any different than
hang
Thursday?
On, hang on. So I've got to get to the bottom of this. We have been, as a state, locked up for the best part of 18 months. We're finally coming out of it, right? We're never going back because everyone's going to be vaccinated, or most people.
Just hold your horses.
Thursday midnight, lots of people are doing something because we're excited about being able to see people again. You're not doing anything, which is fine, which is fine. Friday, I just thought you'd be, you know, booked into the Middle Park Hotel or you may be cruising into the city. You've got nothing. No, what are you doing?
There's still a lot of things haven't come out. Still homeschooling. Kids are still at home, mate.
You homeschooling the kids tomorrow?
Yep.
What's the hardest subject for you to teach?
Nothing.
No, come on. I know that you think you're good at everything, but there must be something that's a little bit more difficult for you.
Fortunately, you're still in prep, and I've still got prep covered. Oh. Mate, poor restaurateurs, and a lot of them can't open yet until it's 80%. It's not.
No, that is true. Yeah. That is true. But go and support.
Yeah, I'll be there when I can. I rang the Middle Park Bowls Club, asked can I get in, and they're one who unfortunately can't open until 80%.
Right. Oh, that's great.
I rang them. I said, can I come down?
Well, that's what we all want to do. Get out, support your local, whether it's the pub, the local cafe.
The bowler.
The bowls club, the bottle-o. We're coming out, Victoria. And we'll be right there with you. Jimmy and I are going to be back tomorrow. Lots happening in the world of racing. We'll bring you all the latest footy news. We'll try to get that fixture news confirmed and get someone on from the AFL tomorrow night. Until then, stay safe, stay well. We're nearly there. You are listening to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Oscar Piastri is going to join us a little later in the show. This is the 20-year-old from Melbourne, Jimmy. Hmm. Won the Formula 3 championship last year. He's currently leading Formula 2 by 36 points. There's just two race weekends left, which is in Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi. This is a guy who could be, as early as next season, be racing in Formula One. I cannot wait to speak to him, and he's 20.
Well, we spoke last night to Andrew Westacott that there's an open seat in the Alfa Romeo,
yep,
which he looks like he could be a front runner for, and at worst, at the Australian Grand Prix, he could come as sort of with an experienced driver being mentored.
Amazing. Amazing. So that's the good news on the Australian front. The bad news on the Aussie front is surrounding Ben Simmons. Now, if you've been living under a basketball rock, which, hey, it happens.
You throw those up when you play basketball.
I definitely did. Was no good as a basketballer. Ben Simmons has been suspended by the Philadelphia 76ers for one game, ironically a game that he might not have even been picked for anyway, for conduct detrimental to the team. Now, there's lots of different reports, depending on who you follow at ESPN or who your basketball go-to man is, but the reports suggest that he's been fined since he's been back upwards of $1.7 million for different misdemeanors, whether it's missing training, not turning up to weight sessions, not doing certain drills that are made him doing. It sounds like he's being an absolute prima donna.
Yep, conduct unbecoming.
Yep, and this is a guy who's an NBA All-Star. He, at his best, is probably, what, in the top six players in the league? Mm. I'm speaking out of turn here. Let's just get the Aussie basketball great on, Chris Anstey, who can give us all the information. Chris, welcome to you. I see you've been quoted in many papers across the country. There have been comparisons made between Ben and Bernard Tomic and Nick Kyrgios. But as you quite rightly put it in the paper today, they're only hurting themselves. What Ben Simmons is doing is hurting more than just himself.
Yeah, good, Sam and Jimmy. It's a really sad situation. Ben is undoubtedly one of the most talented basketball players Australia's ever produced, and we've been in his corner for the for the first number of years of his career. But his relationship with the Philadelphia 76ers and the basketball public in Philadelphia hasn't gone great the last year and a bit, and probably came to a head when he didn't take the shot in the final series or the conference final series that many thought he should have, and he should have. But look, Ben wants out of Philadelphia, and he's doing everything he can to do that. But he's getting paid, and I know it's not all about money, but when you get paid 30 odd US million dollars a year to do your job, it's on you to do your job, however tough it might be. And to do your job means to turn up to training, to train to the best of your capabilities, and when required, when the season rolls around, is to play in the games to the best of your ability. So, look, it's sad there aren't any winners in this. I really hope Ben is able to be moved on, and the Philadelphia Sixers are able to find a trade partner that gives both teams a win, because, like I hope for Ben with the Australian Boomers, I just think that being in a new environment and around people who, probably appreciate his strengths and don't highlight his weaknesses right from the start, it's got to help him. But look, he's not doing himself any favours, but as a sporting public, we've got short memories. We want to love him. We want to support him, but he's making it hard right now.
Can we just unpack a little bit of that, Chris? Because some people will be going, well, he's a star of the game. Number one draft pick, Sam mentioned, all-star. He does a lot of things well, and we're probably a little bit biased, the three of us, because we love him as a player, but didn't take the shot. He is what he is, and a lot of people see the videos that all NBA players seem to put up in their postseason of working on their game, but the jump shot's still not there at NBA level. Isn't that
which is actually okay to some degree?
Which is fine, because he does a lot of things really well. But isn't that what's holding back this trade? That the fact that what other teams are offering up isn't going to satisfy the 76ers?
Mm.
It's what other teams are offering up, that you're spot on. But there are a couple of reasonably easy comparisons to make with Ben Simmons when you talk about his jump shot. One of them's Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's been the most valuable player of the NBA and led the Milwaukee Bucks to a championship last year. He doesn't shoot the ball well either, but he's not embarrassed to stand on the free throw line. He's not scared to take shots. There's another comparison that might be getting more towards where Ben Simmons's trajectory is, and that's Draymond Green, where he's just a non-scorer but a great facilitator. Again, the hope is that there is a team out there that sees the value in Ben and is able to structure their team to put great shooters around him, the ability to space the floor. But again, he needs a new system. He needs a new environment. On top of everything else, and I've heard a lot of people speak about it. Of all the people who speak, Andrew Bogut might be the one, but he needs different advice. He needs better advice from those close to him. I don't think his management's providing the right support and the right advice, because at the end of the day, it's not just about the dollars. It's about, I don't like the term, but Ben Simmons's brand, both in the States and here in Australia. He's got every opportunity to be, right at the top of the tree when it comes to Australian basketball players, but at the moment, he's just not.
Well, it's funny you mention that, and I read your quotes across a number of news articles today. The advice, he doesn't have a Mickey Mouse manager. He's got Rich Paul, who is as close and as tight and has navigated through LeBron James, managed him, they've built teams and things like that. This is no small-time manager. Is that what's surprising you the most?
Yeah, the thing is, but at the same time, you've got to be able to see both sides. You can't just demand something on the player's behalf. Look, at the end of the day, and I think something that hasn't been spoken about nearly enough is Ben signed a multi-year contract, like many players do. And when you sign a contract like that, you are guaranteeing yourself over $100 million And, you know, the downside, there are going to be tough times like there are in any job. And you don't have the right just to walk into another one and retain the same contract. In the NBA, it's closer to doing that. But look, I know the NBA is very supportive of Philadelphia's stance. The other owners around the NBA are very supportive because they don't want Ben Simmons to be able to set a precedent where the player can drive his way out of a team and absolutely, you know, win. It's not a negotiation, but it's a standoff like this is. So there's an increasingly, you know, high level of support from other NBA clubs that hope that the Philadelphia Sixers come out on top of this, because it had set a really horrible precedent for the NBA if Ben was to get out of this and the Philadelphia 76ers received nothing in return.
Chris, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, or as he calls himself, the process, were once partners in crime. Not so anymore. Here's a little bit of Joel talking to the media when they asked him what happened with Ben in training.
Today, I just thought it was more important to focus on the team. Watch football, baseball, basketball. It's happened 1,000 times, and it can happen here too.
At this point, I don't care about that man, honestly. He does whatever he wants. You know, that's not my job. You know, that's those guys' jobs. You know, I'm only focused on trying to make the team better.
At this point, I don't care about that man. So, Chris, in times like this, I always try to play devil's advocate. You know, like as they say, even in the most one-sided argument, there's always two sides to a story. Because my gut feel is, I sit there and go, What's actually happened? Like, why has he cracked the SADs for? And then I think, okay, well, the coach doesn't sound like he really wants him, and the best player in the team is basically telling him that he doesn't care about him anymore. Like, is there anything to this where Ben does sort of feels that this team doesn't actually want him?
Well, yeah, and a lot of that has come back to his actions, which, you know, sadly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a tricky one. But with a lot of things you do, and I've been around sporting clubs at different levels, and I've been in relationships like most of us have, but, you know, sometimes you actually have to just walk in sort of cap in hand and apologise. And I think Ben owes the Philadelphia 76ers an apology, but, you know, instead of just butting heads, you know, sometimes you've just got to say, look, I was wrong. I apologise, and let's see where we end up from here. And it won't be perfect, but it's amazing how big a difference that can make. And I don't, you know, it sounds a little bit wishy-washy, but, you know, I think it's on Ben to do that, to go to train and to train again to the best of his abilities. You know, the 76ers have paid Ben a lot of money, and they've invested a lot of time and effort in him over the last 5-odd years. You know, it's got to go both ways. It doesn't say a lot if you just want to leave when it gets tough.
Well, I feel like the furrow on your brow is deep enough, Chris, but one that guy who'd make you smile today was Patty Mills. 7 from 7 from 3, just a nice little start. And the Brooklyn Nets coming off the bench as always.
Yeah, if we didn't love Patty before Beijing, you know, Patty's catapulted himself. He is the polar opposite. He is just beloved in Australian basketball and I think Australian sporting circles now. And every time a Brooklyn, isn't it amazing that the Brooklyn Nets can roll out a team with Kevin Durant and James Harden and the Australian basketball public's tuning in to see Patty Mills? It's just incredible. And he was great today. You know, didn't do enough to get the win, but I love the fact that he's in that environment. I love the fact that he's playing for an old teammate of mine, Steve Nash, who I think will be able to continually get as much out of Patty as Greg Popovich was able to. And they're going to be right there in the thick of things when the NBA finals roll around. So I can't wait to see what Patty does this season. And wouldn't it be great for him to be, you know, to achieve even more success in another NBA championship after what he was able to do at the Olympic Games?
Oh, would it what? Cap off an incredible couple of years for him. Hey, Chris, just before you go, are we sure that LeBron James hasn't got someone fraudulizing his documents? It says that he's about to turn 37. Are we sure it's not 27?
He is one of the best. It's interesting. I sat down and watched the game today, and he just continues to be able to perform every aspect of the game of basketball, the highest level, perhaps, you know, outside his perimeter shot. But
he just does a lot of the simple things really well, doesn't he, Chris? I know it sounds stupid, but like he just doesn't make simple errors.
he's got one of the highest basketball IQs in the history of the game. Mm. He doesn't need to score the ball, but clearly is very able to. And, you know, there are a lot of comparisons go around over the years about the greatest of all time or a top 10 list. And for me, it's just, I'm going to appreciate watching LeBron James play basketball this year and perhaps next year, however long he plays for, because he's certainly one of the best without need to compare him to anyone else. But it's a joy to watch him play.
Chris, great to have you on. Hopefully next time we're chatting, it's brighter news for Aussies, particularly Ben.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, boys.
Chris Ansey, the Aussie basketball great, bled for the green and gold in the Olympics. Would have played in four if he didn't get an injury. Yeah, it's disappointing what's happened with Ben. And as I said in the first hour, let's hope he doesn't turn into Nick Kyrgios, because Nick, I think, will go down as the greatest talent never to win a slam. Let's hope Ben doesn't go down as a wasted talent either. More on Sports Day with Jimmy Bartel after this.
A chat with a mate. Thanks to Mate Internet and Mobile. Australia's most satisfied customers. NBN from just $59. Search Mate online.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. The Collingwood season review. The Pies finished 17th, 6 wins and 16 losses. The trade period in Nathan Kruger, Pat Lipinski. Out goes Max Lynch to the Hawks. We know that Nick Dacos is coming in as a father-son. Their 2021 draft hand, in order to get a lot of those points, by the way, 27, 36, 48, 40, 46, 48, 55, 58, 78, and 79. We're going to continue the Squid Games theme. Jimmy, who for you got the green light?
Jack Crisp for me.
Yeah, great season.
Unbelievable season. The old-fashioned steak knives. He's better than that, because remember, he was the steak knives
in the Dane Beam steel. Yep, so it was Beams, and they're not getting, is that part of the Treloar deal?
Yeah, there was, yeah, the picks and that all thrown in. But he's,
I think that's right.
He's better. He had a fantastic year.
No, played. It wasn't Treloar. It was Adams.
Yes. It was one of the ones from the Giants.
Go on.
Anyway, Jack Crisp, super consistent, rewarded with the best and fairest this year. He's rock solid halfback, come up through the midfield a lot this year, and he's kicking power and punch.
He's much more than just a solid halfback flanker, isn't he? Which is a lot of people, when they went back there, thought he might be, but he's actually consistently improved layer on layer, year on year.
And does not miss football at all.
Nah, ultra consistent.
Yeah.
Okay, so screen light. Who got the
red light?
Darcy Moore. I know he started the year on fire, but
it's a bit harsh.
No. Once I explain. He was very good at intercepting the footy and setting up a lot of attack from halfback, but his direct opponent kicked a lot of goals on him a few times. But also then you throw into the mix, playing forward. Don't play him forward. And then he got injured, unfortunately. So it's more, we'd love to see an injury-free Darcy Moore back at centre-half-back, dominating like the All-Australian is at centre-half-back.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily red light on Darcy personally. It's just his year, given that he got thrown around, got injured.
It got halted.
Got goals kicked on him.
It got red-lighted.
Thank you. Okay, the three key questions heading into 2022. Was this year a once-off or a sign of where the list is at?
No, it's back. You know, let's use the clock. They wound back the clock and they're starting that premiership clock again. So where they were up, you know, because they were competing grand final, preliminary final,
right.
They've sort of tick, 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 wound the clock back quite a few hours.
Is Jordan Ngoi finally going to live up to his potential?
Well, what depends what you think his potential is. What do you think his potential is?
That's a good question. I think his potential is a mid-forward who can average low to mid 20 disposals and 1.5 goals a game and finish top 10 in a Brownlow.
Well, he was nearly that last year. He kicked 23 goals, averaged low 20 possessions.
Yep.
I think for everyone, the difference between DeGoey's really, really good games and his poor games needs to be closed, that window. Because he's now at that point where he's played enough footy. I think we're nearing on 120 games.
Yeah, that'd be right.
And he's about a goal a game sort of player. I think he's now that, should be at that mature stage.
What do you think his potential is? Top 3 BNF minimum?
Yeah, because if he's having 24, 25 and having 24, 25
and kicking
goals,
a goal, yeah.
It should say that.
Okay, the third question.
Before I get to my game on you.
Can Craig McRae lead the Pies back into the finals next year?
I don't have them in my eight. I think they'll improve.
Yep.
You always get the spike from the new coach, and it does take some teething problems to work out what he's trying to achieve as well.
Okay, unders-overs.
Unders-overs. We'll start on the team first. They won 6 games last year. I'm setting the line at 7.5.
Oh, that's a good line.
To borrow a term from America, Vegas has set the line.
I'm saying overs.
So you think they'll get 8 or more wins?
I think they'll win 8 or more, yep.
Leading goal kicker last year, Brody Majek.
How many kick?
32.
Yep.
I'm going to set the line at 29.5 goals.
Overs.
So you'll kick 30 or more?
Yep.
I think they need more goal kickers than relying on Brody Majek.
I agree with that, but I still think he'll kick 30.
Okay. Brownlow votes, your man, Jordan Ngoi, American Jordan Ngoi.
What did he have last this year in the Brownlow?
He had 9 votes. I've set the line at 10.5. Now, remember, I'm saying from the great Mitch Cleary that he's doing battle ropes in America because that could get him an extra 2 votes.
Hey, are you listening? Hey, hang on. That's the sarcasm of Jimmy Bartel.
Because I want to see what what is it?
Are they doing altitude training or what was the point of?
No.
Why couldn't he even go to a gym here?
No, they're on wobble boards and I think it might be a sponsored tour for Monster Energy.
Monster Academy. Is that the same academy that Bailey Smith just joined? I think it is.
Yeah. I'm not sure you want a Monster before you run out. No disrespect to Monster.
He's shaking a little bit.
Although I did used to drink a Farmers Union iced coffee before I ran out, so I can't say much.
Did you really?
Yeah, and a custard tart.
What? What?
Yeah.
You would have felt so gluggy.
Nah, a couple of hours before the game, there's nothing to do down the rooms.
A custard tart and a Farmers Union iced coffee.
Absolutely.
You're an odd man. What's your last over-unders?
Well, that was it.
Ngoi. Oh, no, that was it. Ngoi, I didn't know. What was it? 10.5?
Yep. So it's 11
Jordan Ngoi will poll over 10.5 votes.
You're very much an overs man. We've done 6 of these unders overs and you've gone overs on every single one.
I'm actually usually an unders man, but yeah, your lines are quite low, I reckon.
I think I've nailed them.
No, they're quite good, but they're on the conservative side.
L Train out the back. He's putting this in the vault, and he's going to see how good you are at the end of the season.
I'm not sure Lawrence has ever been referred to as an L-train.
He needs a nickname.
He does need a nickname.
What are you going with?
Jared calls him Lawrence of Arabia, which I quite enjoy. Oscar Piastri is a name Australian sports fans are going to be hearing a lot more of in the coming years, particularly in Formula One. He's going to join us next.
And at the end of the 30 laps, it's Oscar Piastri who sees the checkered flag first and wins his first ever feature race in Formula 2.
Oscar Piastri then in the Prima car rounds the final last turn to take the checkered flag and the win of the F2 feature race in Sochi.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Yes, Oscar Piastri, write that name down. He's a 20-year-old from Melbourne. He won the Formula 3 championship last year. He currently leads Formula 2 by 36 points with just 2 weekends left in Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi. And the man himself joins us from Oxford in the UK. Oscar, welcome to Sports Day.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on. Oscar, for those people who don't know you but love their sport, can you tell us a little bit about your journey? You're such a young man, only 20, with the world at your feet, and we love supporting Melburnians wherever they go around the world. So tell us where it all started and how you ended up there.
Yep. So I actually started racing remote control cars when I was about 6 or 7 with my dad, and then we met somebody through that who had a go-kart, and then when I was about 10, I had a go in that, and then, started from there in karting, and then moved to Europe when I was 14, so the beginning of 2016, and I've been here ever since.
Oscar, we all think we're great drivers. We can parallel park anywhere. We can do hook turns here in Melbourne like nobody else's business. How do you get identified from being a kart driver? What are they looking for apart from just you, or is it just as simple as you can just go really fast?
Well, I think going really fast is a big part of it. But you've got to, there's a lot of different factors in it. You've got to be able to race well against other people, and be able to overtake them efficiently and without crashing, obviously. Being quick is a big part of it. Usually that's the main thing that people are looking for, to progress.
I just want to ask you too, you've been absolutely dominant this season. You lead by 36 points with, a couple of races to go. But money and backing and the people behind you is just as important once you get to your level, because the Chinese driver, he's looking for an F1 spot as well, like you in the near future.
But he's second behind Oscar at the moment.
Yeah, he's second. But how important is the team behind you and all the financial support?
It's definitely an important factor in F1. It's not just the driving that's important. That's been the case since Formula One existed. So it's not a surprise or nothing new. It's obviously an important aspect. And, I think that's where motorsports are a bit different to a lot of other sports. There's a pretty heavy business side involved. It's just another aspect I've got to deal with, and it's not something I can really change or control. It'd be nice if it was all down to the driving and the results, but unfortunately, that's not always the case in motorsport.
So how do you manage that? Because there's some big powerhouse countries with huge financial backing. Australia, we do love our motorsport, but we've got the V8 supercars. We've also got other competing sports that's getting a lot of financial backing. How do you manage that?
There's not really much I can do to manage that, to be honest. All I can really do is try and go as fast as I can, win as many races as I can, and try and earn my way through results. Where we've had enough financial backing to get to this stage in my career, first of all. I'm more fortunate than a lot of other drivers can say, this final step, with some of the money that's been reportedly flying around, there's just nothing I can do to compete with that. So all I can do is try and prove myself on the track and be as professional as I can off it. And hopefully that gets me a seat sometime in the near future.
So where do you think you'll be next year, Oscar?
I don't completely know. Obviously, there's still one seat on the grid at Alfa Romeo, but
yep.
I don't think my chances are great at that seat. There's been a few names flying around, and my name's been flying around a little bit more in recent days and weeks, which has been nice, but I think the most realistic target is to try and be Alpine's reserve driver, because I'm in their academy at the moment. So we've got a very good link there, and they've been very supportive of my career for the last 2 years. So I think that's the most realistic target. And unfortunately, that probably does mean a year on the sidelines. But I think that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make if it leads to a race seat in F1 in 2023 with them.
And so what would a year on the sidelines look like for you day to day, Oscar? I assume just a lot of training and a lot of learning.
Yeah, pretty much. A lot of, if I do get a reserve driver role, then basically I'm the backup driver. So particularly for all the flyaway races, all the international races where, it's not just a quick flight away, I'll be at all those races firstly in case somebody, one of the race drivers gets ill or gets injured or whatever.
Yep.
But I'll be attending most of the races anyway. To listen in to all the debriefs, watch the race weekends from the garage, just trying to soak up as much as I can in preparation for if I get a seat in 2023. So whilst I won't actually be driving, I'll be, at the team base, probably most of the days in between race weekends on the simulator, helping them in that regard. And training and trying to keep myself fit, and then attending most of the race weekends, even if it's not in a driving capacity.
So, Jimmy, Oscar's only 20. Now, when you and I were 20, I was on my red P's, so I could only have one passenger in the car and, certain other aspects. I'm not sure how much the rules have changed. I'll ask you a really dumb question here, Oscar. Have you got your normal Victorian driver's licence?
I don't have a Victorian driver's license. No, I've got one in the UK. So I've lived here for the last 4 or 5 years now. I did get my learner's permit in Victoria.
Okay.
But then I got my UK license that I can actually, I think I can use that for up to 3 months a year in Australia. So I've kind of bypassed the P plate system, which has been very handy for the last few years.
So would you trust yourself, Oscar, the souped up V8 Commodore just rolling onto the Eastern Freeway and seeing the speed limit of 100?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sensible on the road, to be honest. I think my driving style on the track as well is pretty smooth and controlled. So I'd like to think I'm a pretty sensible driver off the track as well. So I think I'd be all right.
I'm trying to imagine you doing your L's and the driver trying to give you instructions and you're like, I can actually show you what this can do.
Yeah. Well, I told the driving instructor in the UK that I was a racing driver, and there was a few roundabouts I came into probably a little bit faster than what he would have liked, but he understood the assignment from the beginning.
Oscar, a lot of F1 drivers have like passion for other sports, and a lot of them going fast as well. We've seen them on ski slopes, but we also see a lot of them, you know, take up triathlons and different things like that. They look for a physical test,
adrenaline rush,
somewhere else. Do you have another passion like that?
In terms of other sports that I'm involved in myself, not massively. I like to watch a lot of other sports and. To be honest, I haven't watched Aussie Rules for a little while. I watch it very occasionally, especially when Richmond's doing well, which is they've been doing well for the last few years. Unfortunately, this year wasn't quite as good. But besides that, not massively. I watch the Aussie cricket summer because I'm usually home for that, so I can usually watch that. But racing kind of just takes up so much time and. The season, especially this year's F2 season, it's so long that you really can't afford to sort of get injured doing anything too extreme because the gaps are big between the races for us this year, but not really big enough to if something goes wrong, it's not really big enough to recover. I watch most of my other sports instead of playing them.
Now, it's morning in the UK where you are. You're on your way, I think, to a seat fitting at Alpine. What does a seat fitting actually look like? What happens?
Every race car has a sort of generic seat in it, but it's not really, it doesn't really fit everyone.
Okay.
They basically put in like this two-part foam, which heats up and then expands around you whilst you're sat sort of in the generic bucket, we call it. And then it expands around you and then sets hard. So then you've basically got a seat that's perfectly molded to you because otherwise it'd be rather uncomfortable to drive, pulling 4 or 5 Gs through the corners and stuff. So... it's basically just making the seat, personalized to you, setting the pedals where you want. That's pretty much what the job involves.
Okay, very interesting. Oscar, before we let you go, now, at their core, I would say that almost every race car driver is a rev head and a car lover. So you're on the track, but you're not in a Formula 3, 2 or 1 car. You're in a road car, but you've got a choice of any road car in the world to do your hot lap in. What is it?
This is a very big question for 7:30 in the morning, but I think probably a Ferrari, probably a LaFerrari or something. I know that probably won't go down too well with Alpine, but I'd probably choose a LaFerrari or something along those lines.
We like it. And we know we've gotten you up early. We appreciate it. Oscar, we're so excited for your career so far and also your career in the future. We hope that when you make it in the big time in Formula One, just remember Sports Day and we'll come down for a bit of exclusive pit lane access when you're in Melbourne.
Sounds good. Cheers, guys.
Oscar Piastri there, Formula 2 championship leader. He's only 20. He has the world at his feet. How amazing that he was just able to take our call on the way to a seat fitting.
You imagine how nervous parents are watching their kids play football and cricket.
No, I can't. Can
you imagine your kid going around at 300 k's an hour?
No, I just couldn't even think about it. I couldn't even think about it.
How funny is when he's getting his L's? I come into the roundabout a little bit too quick for their liking.
Just tap on the brakes. Tap on the brakes. Great stuff. Hopefully we can hear a little bit more from Oscar. And if he doesn't get that seat alongside Valtteri Bottas at Alfa Romeo, I think it's okay for him to have a year learning behind the scenes.
He's 20.
Yeah. He's 20. Wow. Makes me feel old. Makes Jimmy feel even older. More sports day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. Earlier tonight, Jimmy and myself caught up with new Aussie cricket selector, Tony Dottamade.
Thank you very much, lads. Good to be on.
Tell us, Tony, and we'll get to James Pattinson's news shortly, but your initial thoughts about taking the role and you know the importance that it has at Cricket Australia?
Real excitement. I mean, it's an opportunity that I never really considered before and that I would have. But so I'm just delighted to be involved back in elite cricket again, right at the heart of Australian cricket, and a wonderful opportunity. I was reflecting that you get perhaps a chance of a handful of times to do something special, and I really consider this is it. So I can't wait to get involved, and loving it. So great to be back after a few roles in cricket over the years, but it's really good to be back now, and can't wait to get into it with George and JL and the rest of the team at Cricket Australia.
Tony, Jimmy Bartel here. I'm going to use a bit of footy lingo for you to maybe get you to describe yourself as probably a selector. Are you Malcolm Blight, where you play almost eight forwards and you try and kick 150 points, or you're Chris Scott and you're just trying to play it safe and roll out the template with three quicks, a spinner and a standard batting lineup? What are we going to see from you?
Well, I am a Bulldogs man, Jimmy. Yeah. So can I call myself Bevo and just be done with that? I mean, I think it's there's a real balance to be struck. Of course, I'm a real I was probably a bit of a dour player myself, I suppose, as an all rounder. Just try to get in the game some way, but really loved and really attracted by the players that play with flair and real excitement. So you need that balance of everyone involved. I'm sure in footy's the same. Those elements there working for you, a bit of X factor, but also the guys that are going to deliver. So, nothing's ever the same from game to game and series to series, and with so many things up in the air. But I'm really confident that between JL, George and myself, and, of course, in collaboration with not only the Cricket Australia high performance team, but all the state associations too, working together, that we can really put a special program together and represent Australia well.
I know Sam's going to ask you about James Pattinson, but I've just got one on our batting lineup, and in particular our middle order. Every year as we come around to the first test, and in particular the Ashes, it's almost a debate of whether you go to tried and true, the Usman Khawajas, Marsh as well, back into the middle order, or you try someone with potential who might not quite be ready for test level, but we've seen it work. Cam Green over there in the West, a big tall bat as well. How do you strike the balance? Because obviously cricket is one of those sports where everyone is a selector.
That's right. I gather there was about 11 million applications for the role, actually, Sam, look, it's never sort of easy. I'm a bit like everyone else. I'm 48 hours after being appointed to the role, and most of my opinions and thoughts are really like everyone else's at the moment from the outside. So I'm really interested in and keen to get involved in the nitty-gritty and the planning that the lads have gone through at the moment, and also in detail of the form of who the options are. So I certainly wouldn't be making a call at the moment, but now, what I would say is that it's great that at the moment, with the games that have been played, people are putting their hand up. And as I've said a couple of times, in an Ashes year, that's what you'd really want. You'd want players you want the competition to just step up a notch, and people really keen to play in these key marquee series. So the guys that have been playing at the moment have been doing that. And I know today that New South Wales and Victorian teams are going to get a chance to play a couple of games too, which is great. So that everyone get a bit of a crack to put their name forward.
Tony, James Pattinson has retired from international cricket. Why?
Oh, look, I was really sad when I read that, you know, coming across the wires in the last hour or so. You know, I know James really well. He was coming up through Victoria, obviously, when I was at Cricket Victoria as CEO. So I've seen his right from the outset, really. And, you know, as a young buck coming through, he was such an exciting prospect, but his back, you know, was always an issue in those early days. You know, I think that in the end, he's probably, those injuries have crueled him. He's had dreadful luck over the time, but you know, he's a big-bodied fast bowler. He's really aggressive. He loves putting. He can't go at 50% or 75%. You know, he's 100% when he's on, and when he's been playing well and fit. You know, he's been so exciting to see in those teams because he really does intimidate the opposition as well. And he's someone who just thrives and loves. He's got a real energy about him too. So at his best, that is what was on offer. But there's also been so many frustrations he's had, including a really serious back operation a couple of years ago, given that he kept on having those stresses in about the same spot. So you know, that's really, I mean, that was a courageous decision to go through that, because obviously your body's carrying through for the rest of your life. And I haven't spoken to James, so I hope to get the chance to, but you know, he's finished up with, what, 20-odd tests and 15 one days, and, you know, some 2020s as well. So, you know, a lot of people would kill for that sort of career. But you know, he's still got some cricket left in him. But I just think that extra dimension of, you know, doing the work and putting his body through all of that again sounds like it's just been a bit much.
Tony Dottomade there. Interesting thoughts from Australia's new selector, who's replaced Trevor Holmes, and a big summer of cricket coming up. That does us, Jimmy and I, for this Wednesday evening. We'll be back. We're heading closer to Manukato Stakes Day. We're heading closer to the Cox Plate. Jimmy and I will give you the absolute best previews as we build up to another big weekend of racing. We'll see you tomorrow.